There's been more bad news for Victoria, recording the biggest number of COVID-19 infections since the end of March. A total of 75 new cases were confirmed today, and now there are calls for the closing of Victoria's border with New South Wales. Victoria's Chief Health Officer, Professor Brett Sutton, says a potential lockdown of the worst affected suburbs is still up for consideration. While the state's Health Minister, Jenny Markakos, says infections are not exclusive to Melbourne's north and western suburbs. Here's a little of their press conference today.
You're not immune from catching coronavirus by virtue of the postcode that you live in, that the risk is throughout the state of Victoria, and we want people to remain vigilant about this pandemic.
Clearly big numbers today, absolutely concerning, and a lot of these are all of the settings that we've seen in recent days. So outbreaks occurring across multiple households, across work and other settings, but we know what will turn this around, and it's people stepping forward for testing but also isolating when they've got symptoms. What we're seeing is people are still going out with symptoms. So whether or not it needs a legal direction, I think, is a conversation to be had over the next couple of days. We're not there yet, but it's got to be proportionate. We know what the consequences are of a lockdown in terms of fatigue of people's behaviours. We don't want to drive people out of suburban areas into new unaffected areas. So there's a balancing act in terms of making the call on a lockdown.
Professor Mary Louise McLaws is a member of the World Health Organization's COVID-19 Experts Advisory Panel and joins us tonight. Professor McLaws, welcome.
Hello, nice to be with you.
The former AMA president, now councillor for the City of Sydney, Professor Keren Phelps, says it's time to consider closing the border between Victoria and New South Wales, given the increase in infection numbers. Do you think we should?
Look, I can understand why she feels that, but when you lock down a full state or a full country, it's usually to either buy time or it's because the risk to the community is homogeneous. But it would appear to me, from an outsider's perspective, that the risk in Melbourne is very specific in hotspots. Certainly, people outside of the hotspots have to be very, very vigilant and do what the authorities ask. But you could do what's called ring fencing. And ring fencing is a bit like closing down a suburb or areas of the suburb where it really has very large numbers. And if you use the last 14 days as a rolling average, Melbourne has increased its numbers from 102 on the 18th of June to 323, and now is the time to start ring fencing the hotspots. Certainly they're doing great work for testing, and they need to also wear a mask. It's that serious.
In terms of people's behaviour, we just heard from Victoria's Chief Health Officer, Professor Brett Sutton, say that lockdowns of high-risk suburbs would be potentially problematic because there's a danger that people want to escape that lockdown and they could spread the virus into unaffected areas. How do you view that?
Well, I see his point because we're always very good at thinking the rules don't apply to us. And we certainly saw that when we asked people to self-isolate when they came in from overseas and we had to use mandatory supervised quarantine. But if we had have said and threw our hands up in the air and said it's all too difficult, we would never have got where we are. And it was because of that mandatory quarantining that we've seen far less cases and far less deaths. So I think now they can take a deep breath and get a bit of determination behind them and put up roadblocks with potentially the Defence Force or somebody else, another group, and ensure people don't leave and they don't enter without approval. It's worked in China. When I evaluated the SARS outbreak in 2003 in Beijing, that was our conclusion, that it should have been done very early. And they've certainly done it in Wuhan very successfully.
So you think there should be ADF troops on, you know, the streets of Melbourne to ensure that these really big hotspots are contained now?
Look, I only suggest the ADF because I think the police and and the fire brigade are all too busy to do this. And the authorities are right. If there isn't somebody there ensuring people stay at home or at least within the confines of the postcode or wherever it happens to be that region, wearing a mask when they go out and exercise or go to the shops, then they will try to gain the system and leave. They will try to go to work. They will assume they're not sick enough and that their behaviour won't have an impact on the greater majority, but it will. And so therefore they need people to help them see the right thing to do.
Before he stepped down as Australia's chief medical officer, Brendan Murphy was reluctant to call for the mandatory wearing of face masks. Given what's happened in Victoria, should that be something mandatory in Melbourne?
Look, I couldn't understand why our very bright, innovative group didn't get on board with the updated WHO guidelines that we put out on the 6th of June. We didn't have evidence at the beginning of the pandemic that cloth masks worked, and we also didn't want to suggest that other masks should be used given the poor supply chain for frontline workers. But now new cloth masks, three layers, have been tested in labs to find that they can give up to 70% protection. And the old idea that masks only work for those that have symptoms is just plain wrong. And even if it gave wearers half the protection from breathing in a virus, that's half better than nothing. And we can teach them how to use it, wash them out every night with soap and water, or if they can afford the reusable mask that you can get in the shops at the moment, then please wear them because it's better than nothing. And so I am a little surprised, but sometimes people in authority get a groupthink, and it's very hard for them to step into a different headspace. But I think that a rolling average of 323 cases in Melbourne should be getting them to think a little differently now and very much more determined to rise to that challenge of removing those 323 cases.
Professor McLaws, what went wrong in Melbourne? I know we have a suppression strategy and there were always going to be outbreaks, but it seems that this level of outbreak is genuinely alarming to authorities. What went wrong?
And it's quite rightly alarming because it has gathered speed dramatically from the early in June, then it gathered acceleration by the 18th of June, and then it doubled and tripled by the 28th. So what I think may have gone wrong is I'm loath to blame communities, particularly when we know in outbreak management that you've got a very smart virus and that virus hasn't changed, the dynamics haven't changed, but what does change in every single pandemic is behaviour, and you have to be ready for a behavioural event to help amplify the ability of the virus to get a foothold and go further and deeper into the communities. And what I think we failed to do is to understand that Australia embraces multiculturalism. And multiculturalism does not necessarily go English as an additional language. And we can't expect them to have English as an additional language all the time. So rather than expecting them to be able to turn on the television, the radio, or open up a newspaper in English to get the subtle message that while they're lifting restrictions, you've still got to do all sorts of sensible things and take account of very minor signs and symptoms and stay away. We need to go into those multicultural communities, use their religious leaders and their social leaders to get word of mouth out about not having large family gatherings, because even the definition of what a family is may be very different in certain communities, and explain to them how this virus can take advantage of that. So I think that we've failed our multicultural community by not doing that word of mouth. And then the other thing is, of course, Melbourne is highly interconnected. They're very social and they know lots of people. So If you have a look at the three groups, that was the hotel, quarantine hotel staff, the family clusters, and the health providers, they're all subtly connected, some of them not so highly connected. But we call that social network. And if you do social network analysis, you can see how rapidly important health communication can spread, but also so can viruses. So we should have been thinking about that months ago, particularly leading up to important religious festivals.
Just finally, Victoria has ramped up its testing thanks partly to a new saliva test, which is less invasive than the throat and nose swabs. Do you think it's good enough, this test? Is it a good idea to roll it out?
Look, I think that the Doherty Institute are the pride of Australia, and it's a wonderful invention. It doesn't have the same accuracy as a diagnostic test, but it doesn't need to because it's not diagnostic, it's a screening test. So even though it has a slightly less accurate level than a diagnostic test, it's absolutely brilliant. It's not invasive for people with narrow or little noses and with the operators maybe occasionally a little clumsy. It is an excellent alternative from the swab.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Stay safe.
Professor Mary Louise McLaws is a member of the World Health Organization's COVID-19 Experts Advisory Panel, and she's from the University of New South Wales.